Chapter 24. Louis Sinclair had been born in 2059. He lived in Messopia, one of the first purpose-built industrial accommodation leisure complexes to be constructed on Spain's Mediterranean coast, a cheerless mathematical warren of concrete, glass, and plastic, which covered 5 square kilometres and sheltered 90,000 people against the ferocious Armada storms which were beginning to plague Earth. It was a heavily subsidized experiment by the European Federal Parliament, by that time desperate to tackle the cancerous underclass problem thrown up by the continent's 85 million unemployed. Messopia was a qualified success. Its medium-scale engineering industries provided only a minimal return for investors, but it provided a foretaste of the huge arcologies, which, in the centuries to come, would house, protect, and employ Earth's dangerously expanded population. His path through life was never going to be anything other than troublesome. Born to low-income parents, who were only in the new microcosm city because of the parliamentary law requiring a socially balanced population. There was no real niche for him in an enterprise geared so resolutely towards the middle-class job-family-home ethic. He played truant from school, turned to crime, drugs, violence, a textbook delinquent, one of thousands who ran through Messopia's architecturally bankrupt corridors and malls. It could have been different if the education system had caught him early enough, if he had had the strength to hold out against peer pressure, if Messopia's technocrat designers had been less contemptuous of the social sciences. The opportunities existed. Louis Sinclair lived in an age of quite profound technological and economic progress, and never really knew it, let alone shared in it. The first batches of asteroid-mined metal were starting to supplement depleted planetary reserves. Biotechnology was finally living up to its initial promise. Crude examples of the affinity bond were being demonstrated. More and more non-polluting fusion plants were coming on stream as the supplies of helium-3, mined from Jupiter's atmosphere, increased. But none of it reached down to his level of society. He died in 2076, 17 years old, 1 year after the Bitech habitat Eden was germinated in orbit around Jupiter, and 1 year before the New Kong asteroid settlement began its FTL Star Drive research project. His death was as wasteful as his life, a fight with power-blade knives in a piss-puddled subterranean warehouse, him and his opponent both high on synthetic crack. The fight was over a 13-year-old girl they both wanted to pimp. He lost, the power-blade chopping through his ribs to slice his stomach into 2 unequal portions. And Louis Sinclair made the same discovery as every human eventually made. Death was not the end of being. In the centuries that followed, spent as a virtually powerless astral entity, suspended in dimensional emptiness, perceiving and envying mortals in their rich physical existence, he simply wished it were so. But now Louis Sinclair had returned. He wore a body again, weeping for joy at such simple magnificence as raindrops falling on his upturned face. He wasn't going to go back into the deprivation which lay after physical life, not ever. And he had the power to see that it was so. Him and all the others, acting in combination, they were supreme badasses. There was more to him than before, more than the strength which flesh and blood provided. Part of his soul was still back there in the terrible empty gulf. He hadn't emerged fully into life, not yet. He was trapped like a butterfly, unable to complete the transformation from dirt-bound pupa to wing-free ephemeral. Often he felt as though the body he had possessed was simply a biological sensor mechanism, a mole's head peeking out from the earth, feeding sensations back to his feeling-starved soul via an incorporeal umbilical cord. strange energinistic vortices swirled around a dimensional twist where the two continua intermingled, kinking reality.